Assalamu alaikum and welcome back. And if he follows this sunnah, he has the hadith in al-Bukhari and elsewhere proving that the companions used to do it, such as Malik ibn al-Huwayrith. Therefore, we should not make this as an issue to fight or to dispute among scholars. We move on to hadith number 91. And if you haven't, does anybody have questions up till now? Okay, one or two, this is sufficient. We move on to the hadith. Muhammad Aman, can you read it, please?
Narrated Abdullah ibn Malik ibn Buhayna, whenever the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam offered prayer, during prostration, he used to separate his arms from his body so widely that the whiteness of his armpits was visible.
Very well. Again, this is one of the descriptions of the Prophet's prayer sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Whenever he used to prostrate, he used to separate his arms away from his body, so that in another hadith, if a small goat wanted to pass by from underneath, it could have, because there is enough place for it. And this is a way showing the strength and the enthusiasm in prayer. Unlike those who pray as if they are dying. There are people, when they pray, they offer prayer as if they are almost dying, not because of the fear of Allah, because of old age maybe, because of they're so tired, so they pray like this. And Umar radiallahu anhu, whenever he went to the masjid and saw people praying like this, he used to hit them with his durra. Durra is a stick with some type of growth, normal growth at the end of it, so it hits and it's very hard. So whenever he saw people praying like this, he used to hit them while they're praying and say, do not kill our religion. Do not kill our religion by pretending that you're dying. This is not sign of khushu'. Khushu' is not only in your movement. Submissiveness and concentration in prayer is not only by not moving, but also by the heart. So if you pretend that you're not moving, this is good. But if you pretend that you are dying or that you are so weak and this, and actually you're not, this is not part of the religion. That is why the Prophet ﷺ used to separate his arms away from his body. And to the extent that the companion says, I used to see the whiteness of his armpit. The Prophet was praying without a shirt. No, he was praying without a shirt, but the shirts had long sleeves. And sometimes you can take a look at a person's sides or shoulders throughout the opening, if you have a wide opening. And also this is a description of the Prophet ﷺ uniqueness. Because we all know that due to the fact that we remove the armpit hair, it may look a little bit darker skin than your usual normal skin. The Prophet ﷺ did not have this. On the opposite, it was even more beautiful. So even his armpit was not darker in skin, but it was also white, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Now, what does this tell us? When you separate your arms from your body, it tells us that the seven bones that you are instructed to prostrate on, they should each take their full position and what they need and require to fulfill a perfect sujood. As stated before, some people, when they prostrate on their fingers. Others, they prostrate on their elbows, and this is forbidden. The Prophet described this, alayhi salatu wasalam, to be the way of a beast or of a dog, the way he sits. Not only that, some people, when they put their forehead on the ground, they don't touch it fully. They just lightly touch it. Why? Some brothers have heard saying that I don't want to have a mark in my forehead. Like those people who pray a lot, they sometimes, it gets weakened. The forehead skin gets weak and there is a mark on it. So he says, no, I don't want people to know this. So when he prostrates, he doesn't fully put his forehead and nose on the ground. He simply touches the hair of the carpet, for example, slightly. And this is not permissible. This is not considered to be sujood. Why? Because the full sujood, you have to prostrate fully in having your hands away from your body, your forehead, touching, not only touching, pressing on the ground, and likewise your knees and feet and hands. Before we go on to the following hadith, let's see if you have any questions. Yes, brother.
Sheikh, as you said that regarding Jilsa, that we have a hadith, the Prophet waited for some time and then he stood up. But as you said that, we should not argue on that. But can we go to such an extent in saying that you're not following the Sunnah? Because as you said, they are following a group of scholars. But what we learned is that when you have a Sahih hadith, and no matter how big the scholar may be, so we should not, you know, agree with the scholar. Rather, we should follow the hadith. So now, if this person is following the group of scholars, so isn't he doing wrong? We should point it out to him.
First of all, it is very important for you as a student of knowledge not to prejudge people. Do never, ever prejudge people and start classifying them and labeling them. He's not following the Sunnah, he's not following the Sunnah, he's doing innovation. I'm the only one who's following the Sunnah. Second of all, we mentioned before in our classes that Ibn Taymiyyah, may Allah have mercy on his soul, wrote a very beautiful book called Raf'ul Malam, How to Remove the Blame. On who? On Al-A'imma Al-A'lam, on the prominent imams and scholars. How to uplift the blame, how not to blame them. And if you recall, we stated that in this book, he gathered the excuses that we give to prominent scholars when they make a mistake. And we say, among these reasons, maybe the hadith did not reach them. And that is why they did not say, you should do this or should do that. And gave an example to a hadith that reached them and they forgot it. Umar ibn Khattab and Ammar ibn Yasir, may Allah be pleased with them, when they both had nocturnal emission while they were outside the borders of the Medina and could not offer ghusl, they did not have water. Umar did not pray, Ammar turned on the ground, forming tayammum as a beast. And when they went to the Prophet said, no, what you have done was wrong, you only should have struck the ground once and wiped your face and hands. Umar did not remember, and he is Umar. He did not remember the incident, though he was there. So Ibn Taymiyyah says that if Umar did not remember, maybe a lot of the imams got the hadith and forgot it. Maybe the hadith did not reach him. As in the case of Umar ibn Khattab, when one of the companions came and said, Assalamu alaikum, adkhul, three times. When he did not answer, he left. Umar came out, called him, why did you leave? He said, because the Prophet said, you make three times request and you leave. He said, by Allah, you bring me two witnesses or I will beat you and make you an example. And the man was terrified. He went back to his companions and said, what's wrong with you? He told them that this is what happened with me and Umar. They all laughed. And they said, Umar does not know the ruling? That's funny. We will send the youngest among us with you. We'll not send someone who's old. We'll send the youngest companion to testify with you. And he went and testified in front of Umar. Umar said, I did not falsify what you had said. I did not accuse you of lying. This is something I did not know. Imagine. And I did not want the Prophet ﷺ's hadith to be taken slightly and easy. Everyone says, the Prophet said, and he did not say. So this is an indication that it might not have reached him. And that is why we always give them the benefit of the doubt. We know that this is hadith stating that the Prophet used to do it. Maybe they had another explanation to it. Maybe the hadith is not authentic to them. So we cannot accuse them by not following the Sunnah. And Allah Azza wa Jalla knows best. This is all the time we have until we meet next time. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.